This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Apprentice in Death by J.D. Robb, performed by Susan Erickson. One impulse from a vernal wood may teach you more of man, of moral evil and of good, than all the sages can. William Wordsworth. Are God and nature then at strife, that nature lends such evil dreams? Alfred Lord Tennyson. Prologue. It would be the first kill. The apprentice understood the years of practice, the countless targets destroyed, the training, the discipline, the hours of study, all led to this moment. This cold, bright afternoon in January 2061 marked the true beginning. A clear mind and cool blood. The apprentice knew these elements were as vital as skill, as wind direction, humiture, and speed. Under the cool blood lived an eagerness ruthlessly suppressed. The mentor had arranged all, efficiently, and with an attention to detail that was also vital. The room in the clean middle-class hotel on 2nd Avenue faced west, had privacy screens and windows that opened. It sat, unpretentiously, on a quiet block of Sutton Place, and offered a view of Central Park, though from nearly a mile away. The mentor had planned well, booking a room on a floor well above the trees. To the naked eye, Woolman Rink was only a blob of white catching glints from the strong sun, and those who glided over it were only dots of moving color. They'd skated there, student and teacher, more than once, had watched the targets skimming, twirling, without a care in the world. They'd scouted other areas, the target's workplace, the home, the favored shops, restaurants, all the routines, and had decided, together, the rink in the great park offered everything they wanted. They worked well together, smoothly and in silence, as the mentor adjusted the bipod by the west-facing window, as the apprentice attached the long-range laser rifle, secured it. Cold winter air eked in the window as they raised it a few inches. Breath even, hands steady, the apprentice looked through the scope, adjusted. The ice rink jumped close, close enough to see blade marks scoring the surface. All those people, the brightly colored hats, gloves, and scarves. A couple holding hands, laughing as they stumbled over the ice together. A girl with golden blonde hair, wearing a red skin suit and vest, was spinning, spinning, spinning until she blurred. Another couple with a little boy between them, their hands joined with his as he grinned in wonder. The old, the young, the in-between. The novices and the show-offs, the speedsters and the creep-alongs. And none of them knew, none of them, that they were caught in the crosshairs seconds from death, seconds from the choice to let them live, make them die. The power was incredible. Do you have the target? It took another moment. So many faces, so many bodies. Then the apprentice nodded. There, the face, the body, the target. How many times had that face, that body been in the scope? Countless. But today would be the last time. Have you selected the other two? Another nod, as cool as the first. In any order. You're green to go. The apprentice checked the wind speed, made a minute adjustment, then, with a clear mind, with cool blood, began. The girl in the red skin suit circled in back crossovers, building speed for an axle jump. She began the rotation forward, the move from right skate to left, arms lifting. The lethal stream struck the center of her back, with her own momentum propelling her forward. Her body, already dying, struck the family with the little boy. Like a projectile, that already dying body propelled them back, down. The screaming began. In the chaos that followed, a man gliding along on the other side of the rink slowed, glanced over. The stream hit him center mass. As he crumpled, two skaters coming up behind him swerved around, kept going. The couple, holding hands, still tripping along, skated awkwardly to the rail. The man gestured toward the jumble of bodies ahead of them. "Hey, I think they're..." The stream punched between his eyes. In the hotel room, in the silence, the apprentice continued to watch through the scope, imagined the sounds, the screams. It would have been easy to take out a fourth, a fifth, a dozen. Easy. Satisfying. Powerful. But the mentor lowered his field glasses. "Three clean hits. Targets down." A hand laid on the apprentice's shoulder signaled approval, signaled the end of the moment. "Well done." Quickly, efficiently, the apprentice broke down the rifle, stored it in its case as the mentor retracted the bipod. Though no words were exchanged, the joy, the pride in the act, in the approval, spoke clearly. And seeing it, the mentor smiled just a little. "We need to secure the gear, then we'll celebrate. You earned it. We can debrief after that. Tomorrow's soon enough to move on to the next." As they left the hotel room, wiped clean before they'd begun and after they'd finished, the apprentice thought the next couldn't come soon enough. 1. When Lieutenant Eve Dallas strode into the bullpen of homicide after an annoying appearance in court, she wanted coffee. But Detective Jenkinson had obviously been lying in wait. He popped up from his desk, started toward her, leading with his obnoxious tie of the day. "Are those frogs?" she demanded. "Why would you wear a tie with piss-yellow frogs jumping around on... Christ! Puke-green lily pads!" "Frogs are good luck. It's feng shui or some shit. Anyways, the fresh meat you brought in took a pop in the eye from some chemi head down on Avenue B. She and Uniform Carmichael hauled him and the dealer in. They're in the tank. New girl's in the break room with an ice patch. Figured you'd want to know." Fresh meat equaled the newly transferred Officer Shelby. How'd she handle it? "Like a cop. She's all right, LT." "Good to know." She really wanted coffee. And not crap break room coffee, but the real coffee in her office auto chef. But she'd brought Officer Shelby on board, and on her first full day, she'd taken a fist in the eye. So Eve, tall and lanky in her black leather coat, walked to the break room. Inside, Shelby sat drinking crap coffee, squinting at her PPC while wearing a cold patch over her right eye. She started to get to her feet, but Eve gestured her down. "How's the eye, officer?"
"My kid's sister hits harder, Lieutenant."
At Eve's finger motion, Shelby lifted the patch. The bloodshot white, the black and purple raying out from it, had Eve nodding. "That's a nice one.
Stick with the patch a while. Yes, sir. Good work. Thank you, sir.
On the way to her office, she stopped by Uniform Carmichael's cube.
Run it through for me.
Detectives Carmichael and Santiago caught one down on Avenue B.
We're support, just crowd control.
We spot the illegals deal going down 5 feet away.
Can't just ignore it, but since we've got a body coming out, we're just going to move them along.
Dealer? He's hands up, no problem.
Kemi head's jonesing some, and he just punched her.
Sucker punch, sir. She took him down and fast, I'll give her that.
A little bit on the reckless side, maybe, but it's her eye his fist punched.
We hauled them both in, with assaulting an officer added to the doper.
She can take a punch, Uniform Carmichael added. I'll give her that, too.
Keep her tight for a few days, and let's see how she rolls. Before somebody else wanted her for anything else, Eve cut straight through to her office. She programmed coffee, black, without bothering to take off her coat. She stood by her skinny window drinking the coffee, her whiskey-colored cop's eyes scanning the street traffic below, the sky traffic above. She had paperwork. There was always paperwork, and she'd get to it. But she had just closed an ugly case and had spent the morning testifying over another ugly case. She supposed they were all ugly, but some twisted harder than others. So she wanted a minute with her coffee and the city she'd sworn to protect and serve. Maybe, if she was lucky, a quiet night would follow. Just her and Rourke, she thought. Some wine, some dinner, maybe a vid, some sex. When a murder cop ended up with a busy billionaire businessman, quiet nights at home were like the biggest, shiniest prize in the box. Thank God he wanted those quiet nights, too. Maybe sometimes they did the fancy bits. It was part of the deal, part of the marriage rules in her book. And more than sometimes, he worked with her over pizza in her home office. The reformed criminal with the mind of a cop? A hell of a tool. So maybe a quiet night for both of them. She set the coffee on her desk, took off her coat, and tossed it over her deliberately uncomfortable visitor's chair. Paperwork, she reminded herself, and started to rake her hand through her hair. Hit the snowflake hat she tried not to let embarrass her. After tossing that on top of the coat, she finger-combed her short, choppy cap of brown hair, sat. Computer, she began, and her desk link sounded.
Dallas. Dispatch, Dallas, Lieutenant Eve.
Even before the rest, she knew the shiny prize would have to stay in the box for a while. With her partner, Eve walked from 6th Avenue, where she'd double-parked her DLE. With a scarf of purple and green zigzags wrapped around her neck, Peabody clomped along the path, shooting unhappy looks at the snow blanketing everything else.
I figured, hey, we'll be in court, and we got temps in the 40s. I can wear my cowgirl boots no problem. If we've got to go tramping through the snow, it's January. And what cop wears pink to a murder trial? Rio had on red shoes, Peabody pointed out, referring to the APA. Red's just dark pink when you think about it.
When Eve thought about it, she wondered why the hell they were talking about footwear when they had 3 DBs on tap.
Suck it up.
She flashed her badge when they came to the first police line, kept walking, ignored reporters who pushed against that line and shouted questions.
Somebody had their head on right, she decided, holding the media hounds back out of sight of the rink.
That wouldn't last, but it kept what was bound to be complicated a little simpler for the time being. She spotted more than a dozen uniforms coming or going, and at least 50 civilians.
Raised voices, a few edged with hysteria, carried clearly. I thought we'd have more civilians, more witnesses. Eve kept scanning. Bodies drop, people run. We probably lost half of them before the first on-scene got here. She shook her head. Media doesn't need to get within camera range. They're going to have dozens of people sending them vids. Since nothing could be done about that, Eve set it aside, flashed through the next barricade. As she did, a uniform peeled off, lumbered toward her. She recognized the 30-plus years vet and knew the relative order established was due to his experience and no bullshit style. Farik. He gave her a nod. He had a dark bulldog face on a broad-chested bulldog body, and eyes of bitter chocolate brown that had seen it all and expected to see worse at any moment. Hell of a mess. Run it through for me. Got the first dispatch at round 1520. I'm baby walking a rook, and had him doing some foot patrol on 6th, so we hot-footed it. Had him start a line back a ways, keep people out, but Christ on a crutch, you can't block the whole freaking park. You're first on scene. Yeah. 911 started pumping in, and so did cops, but people were already running from the scene when I got here. Had to work with park security to hold what we could. Had some injuries. We got MTs in to treat the minors, but we had a kid about 6, broken leg. The way the WIT reports shake out, once you cut through the crap, is the first Vic collided with him and the kid's parents, and the kid's leg got broke in the fall. Got their contact info and the hospital for you. Peabody? I'll take that information, officer. He reeled it off without pulling out his notebook. Sweepers aren't going to be happy about the state of the crime scene. People all the fuck over it, and the bodies have been moved around. Had a medical on the ice, and a vet, an animal doc, and they worked on the Vicks and the injured. First Vic took it in the back. That's the female out there, in red. He turned, gestured with a lift of that bulldog chin. Witch statements aren't clear about which got hit second, but you got two males, one gut shot, one between the fucking eyes. Looks like a laser strike to me, LT, but I don't want to tell you your job. And you're going to hear from some of these wits about knives and suspicious individuals and the usual crap. You didn't make lieutenant without wading through and learning to cut through the usual crap. All right. You got the doctors on tap? Yeah. Got them inside the locker room. Got another couple in there, too, who claimed they were the first to reach one of the male Vicks. And the wife of one of the male Vicks. She's firm he was the last hit, and I lean toward that. Peabody, take them, and I'll start on the bodies. I want the security discs, and I want them now. They got them ready for you, Farik told her. Ask for Spiker. He's rink security and not altogether a dickhead. I'm on it. Peabody headed off, careful to avoid the snow. Gonna want some grippers for your boots, Farik told Eve. Pile of them over there. Hotshot murder cop face planting on the ice wouldn't inspire confidence. Hold the line, Farik. It's what we do. She walked around to the rink's entrance, strapping on a pair of the toothy grips before opening her field kit and sealing her hands and boots. Hey, are you in charge? Who's in fucking charge? She glanced over, locking eyes with a red-faced man of about 40 who was wearing a thick white sweater and black skin pants. I'm in charge. You have no right to hold me. I have an appointment. Mr. Granger, Wayne Granger, and I know my rights. Mr. Granger, do you see the three people lying on the rink? Of course I see them. Their rights trump yours. He shouted after her as she worked her way across the ice to the female victim. Something about police states and lawsuits. Looking down at the girl in red,
couldn't have been more than 20 years old. Eve didn't give him another thought. Blood pooled under her, spreading more red on the ice. She lay on her side, and Eve could clearly see bloody marks where other skaters and the medicals had gone through. Her eyes, a bright summer blue, already glazed with death, stared, and one hand lay, palm up, in her own blood. No, Eve didn't give Granger and his appointment another thought. She crouched down, opening her field kit, and did her job. She didn't rise or turn when Peabody came out.
"Vic is Elissa Wyman, age 19. Still lives with her parents and younger sister, Upper West. TOD 1515. ME will determine COD, but I agree with Farik. It looks like a laser strike. The doctors, both of them, agree. And the vet, he was an army corpsman, so he's seen laser strikes. They didn't do more than look at her. She was obviously gone. One tried working on the gut shot, and the other examined the head shot, but they were all gone. So they focused on the injured." Eve rose with a nod. "Security discs. Right here." Eve plugged one of the discs into her own PPC, cued it to 1514, and focused first on the girl in red.
"She's good," Peabody commented.
"Her form, I mean. She's building up some speed there, and..."
She broke off when the girl shot through the air, form gone, and collided with the young family. Eve rewound it, backed up another minute, and now scanned the other skaters, the onlookers.
"People are giving her room," Eve murmured. "Some are watching her.
I don't see any weapons." She let it play through, watched the second victim jerk back, eyes widening, knees buckling. Ran it back, noted the time. Ran it forward. Less than 6 seconds between strikes. People skated to the first Vic and the family. Security came rushing out, and the couple skating, poorly, along the rails, slowed. The man glanced back, and the strike. Just over 6 seconds for the third. 3 shots in roughly 12 seconds. 3 dead. Center back, gut, forehead. That's not luck. And none of those strikes came from the rink or around it. Tell Farik, when he's got all names and contacts, that anyone who has given a statement can go, except for the medicals and the third Vic's wife. Get a full statement from all three of them, and contact whoever the Vic's wife wants. The female's cleared for bagging, tagging, and transpo to the morgue. And we need park security feeds.
Which sector?
All of them. Leaving Peabody gaping, Eve crossed the ice to the second victim. When she finished with the bodies, she went inside. The two medicals sat together on a bench in a locker area, drinking coffee out of go cups. Eve nodded to the uniform, dismissing her, then sat on the bench across from them. "I'm Lieutenant Dallas. You've given statements to my partner, Detective Peabody." They both nodded. The one on the left, trim, close-shaven, mid-30s, nodded.
"Nothing we could do for the three who were killed. By the time we got to them, they were gone."
Dr. Lansing. I honestly thought the girl in the red suit had just taken a bad spill. And the little boy, he was screaming. I was right there, that is, right behind them when it happened. So I tried to get to him first. I started to move the girl to get to the little boy and realized she wasn't hurt or unconscious. I heard Matt shouting for everyone to get off the ice, to get clear.
"Matt." "That's me, Matt Brolin. I saw the collision. Saw that girl go into her turn for a jump. Saw her propelled forward into the family. I was going to go help. Then I saw the guy go down. Saw him drop. Even then, I didn't put it together. But I saw the third one. I saw the strike, and I knew. I was a corpsman. 26 years ago, but it doesn't leave you. We were under attack, and I wanted people to get to cover. You two know each other? We do now, Brolin said. I knew the third guy was gone. Hell of a sniper strike. But I tried to do what I could for the second one. He was still alive, Lieutenant. He looked at me. I remembered that look, and it's a hard one to remember. He wasn't gonna make it, but you've gotta do what you can do. He shielded the guy with his own body, Lansing put in. People panicked, and I swear some would have skated right over that man, but Matt shielded him. Jack had his hands full with the little boy, and the parents got banged around some, too, right? They didn't have time to break their own fall, Lansing explained. The father's got a mild concussion, the mother's a sprained wrist. They'll be all right. The boy, too, but he got the worst of it. Security had a first aid kit. I gave him a little something for the pain. The MTs were here inside of 2 minutes. You have to give them credit. I went to help Matt, and we had to try on the last one. But like Matt said, he was gone. Gone before he hit the ice. Nothing to do but perform some basic first aid on people who'd taken falls or cut themselves on blades. Skates, Matt added. He scrubbed a hand over his scruffy gray beard. It wasn't until they put us in here that it came back to me. You've got to put it away when you're working. Put what away? The fear. The fear you could take a strike in the back of the head any second. Whoever shot those people, they've got skills. It came from the east, the strikes. How can you know that? I saw the third hit, saw the angle, the way the guy was turned, from the east. His eyes narrowed on Eve's. You already knew that. I reviewed the security disks. We'll reconstruct, but at this point I agree with you. His wife's in the office over there with your partner. Her parents just got here. Brolin heaved out a breath. This is why I went to veterinary school when I got out of the army. Dogs and cats? Easier to handle than people. You handled people just fine, both of you. I want to thank you for what you did here today. We have your contact information if we need to talk to you again. You can reach me at Cop Central if you need to talk to me. Lieutenant Dallas. We can go? Lansing asked. Yes. How about that beer? Brolin managed a weak smile. How about a couple of them? First round's on me. Lansing pushed to his feet. People come here to enjoy the park. To take their kids for a little adventure. Or like that girl, for the joy. She was a pleasure to watch. And now... He broke off, shook his head. Yeah. First round's on me. As they went out, a man and a woman with security badges on lanyards stepped in. Lieutenant Dallas, I'm Carly Dean, Rink Security, and this is Paul Spiker. Is there anything else we can do? Anything? Who's head of security? That would be me. Carly, no more than 5'2" and 100 pounds, lifted her shoulders. People assume it's Paul. He's the muscle. She said it as a joke, struggling to smile. Okay, we're gonna have to keep you closed down until further notice. We've already taken care of that. The media's bombarding the main link, but we've put it on record. Just your standard, the rink's closed. One of them managed to get my personal number, but I've blocked it. Keep doing that. I need you to keep off the ice, you and any of your staff, until that's cleared. Crime scene techs will come in shortly. Did you know any of the victims? Elissa Wyman. She's here almost daily during the season. She was going to try out for this skating troupe. Carly lifted her hands, dropped them,
She was nice, friendly. She'd bring her kid sister sometimes.
I knew Mr. Michelson a little, Paul added.
Second Vic, Eve thought. Brent Michelson, doctor, age 63, divorced, one offspring.
From here, he liked to skate, would take an afternoon, every other Tuesday. Nothing fancy, nothing like Alyssa, but he was a regular. Once in a while he'd bring his grandkids, evenings or Saturdays for that. He liked the solo in the afternoons. I never saw the other guy before.
Paul glanced toward the office.
The one whose wife's in my office, Carly added. Your partner's with her. She's good with her. Is there anything we can do for you, Lieutenant?
Give us your office for a little while more.
As long as you need.
I'm sure my partner asked, but so will I. Have either one of you noticed anyone coming around, either to skate or to watch? Anyone who seemed too interested in Alyssa or Brent Michelson?
Not like this. A lot of people hang around longer when Alyssa's skating, and there've been a couple of boys off and on who hit on her, but nothing over the top.
We keep an eye out, Carly continued. We don't have a lot of trouble.
Pushy shovies, your basic collisions. More trouble at night, but even then, Paul shrugged. You get an asshole who starts a fight. Sorry about the asshole, he added.
I'm rarely sorry about assholes, Eve commented. We'll be in touch when you're clear.
I'd advise your brass to coordinate with the police liaison on a statement, timing and content.
They're gonna be in a spin about lawsuits.
The brass always is, Eve said, moving to the office.
Inside, a woman in her early 30s sat in a folding chair, flanked by a man and a woman. Each had an arm around her, while Peabody crouched on the floor, talking softly. Peabody took the woman's hand when Eve entered.
Jenny, this is Lieutenant Dallas.
Jenny looked up with devastated eyes.
We saw the vid. Alan really liked it. You look like you did in the vid. I mean, like the actress did. I don't know what to do.
I'm sorry for your loss, Mrs. Markham. I know Detective Peabody has already talked to you. If I could have just a few more minutes.
We were skating. We're terrible skaters. And we were laughing. We were taking the whole day together, and tonight, too. It's our anniversary. 5 years today.
She turned her face into the man's shoulder.
They had their first date here.
He cleared his throat, but it didn't clear the faint Irish accent that made Eve think of Rourke.
I'm Liam O'Dell, Jenny's father. This is Kate Hollis, her mother.
It was my idea, the skating. Let's do everything we did on our first date. It was my idea to come here, like we did that day. We both took off work, and we were going to get pizza afterward, just like we did on our first date. That's when I was going to tell him why I wasn't having wine like we did then. I was going to tell him I'm pregnant. Oh, baby.
Her mother drew her in close, so they clung and shuddered together.
Oh, my baby. I was going to tell him. Then we were going to tell you and Daddy and Alan's mom and dad. But we were going to have today, all day.
As Peabody had, Eve crouched so she was eye level. Jenny, who else knew you'd be here today?
Cherry, my friend, and I think her guy, Charlie. They're our friends. I told Mom. We really just decided a couple days ago. I pushed for it when I took the test and it was positive.
Did Alan have any enemies? Anyone he had trouble with?
No. No. Detective Peabody asked, and just no. People like Alan. He's a teacher, We're teachers, and he helps coach soccer and volunteers at the homeless shelter. Everyone likes Alan. Why would anyone hurt him? Why?
We're going to do everything we can to find out. You can contact me or Detective Peabody anytime.
I don't know what to do.
You should go with your mom. Liam leaned over, kissed her head. Go home with your mom now.
Daddy!
I'll come. I'll be there. He looked over her head to Kate, got a teary nod. Go with your mom, darling, and I'll be coming right along. Peabody, come with me. We'll have an officer take you home. Liam sat where he was as Peabody led them out. We're divorced, you see, and Kate, she's married again. 8 years. Or is it 9? He shook his head. But such things don't matter a bit now, do they? As he rose, he cleared his throat again. He was a good man, our Alan. A good and stable man who loved my girl with his whole heart. You'll find who took him from her, from my girl and from the baby inside her. We'll do everything we can. I saw the vid and read the book as well. That Icove business. You'll find who took the life of this good young man. Eyes blurred with tears, he hurried out. Eve sat, took a moment to clear away the grief that hung so thick in the air, then pulled out her link. Lowenbaum, SWAT commander, the best she knew. I need a consult. I'm getting rumors about Central Park. I'm confirming them. I need an expert consult. And to think I was going off tour. I can be at the rink in... Not the rink, not yet. I've got security feed, and I need a good screen. My place isn't far from here. Can you come there? The Dallas Palace? Bite me, Lowenbaum. He laughed, then just grinned at her. Yeah, I can come there. The grin faded. I get conflicting numbers on VIX. 3. And it's my sense it could have been a hell of a lot worse. If it can get worse, it usually does. That's why I need the consult. I think it could get worse. I have to do the notifications. Can you be there in an hour? Can do. Appreciate it. She clicked off as Peabody came back. I need you to go to the hospital. Or check and see if the kid with the broken leg and his parents are still there. Wherever they are, go there. See what they saw. Write it up. I'll do the notifications. I'm still working on the security feeds. It's a big park. Have them sent to my home and office units. We can start with sectors east of the rink. Have them sent to your home and office units, too. I want you to study them. Get McNabb to study them. You flag anything or anyone that looks off. If this came from inside the park, we're looking for an individual with some sort of bag or case. If? Eve stepped out of the office, scanned the empty locker room. Because I'm betting it came from outside the park. We're going to be looking at buildings with west-facing windows, starting with 6th, working east until Lowenbaum tells me to stop. Lowenbaum? He's coming into consult. I want this rink feed on my screens at home with equipment that doesn't argue with me. Lowenbaum? He's so cute. At Eve's steely stare, Peabody hunched her shoulders. I'm with McNabb through and through, but I can see cuteness through my eyes and my cutometer. You have to admit, he ranks high on the cutometer. Cutes for kids and puppies, if you're into kids and puppies. I'll give you he's frosty enough. Completely. I'll push on the security feeds and see if I can find anything new from the kid and his parents. As she spoke, Peabody began to rewind her long scarf. We're gonna be wading through piles of wit statements. Take the first 10. I'll start with the rest. Let's see if we can find anything that connects the three Vics other than a visit to the skating rink. And let's hope we do. If this was pure random, it's already gotten worse. As she stepped outside, Eve looked over the heads of the sweepers busy working on the scene and stared east. Again, she thought, it could get a lot worse. 2. Hard to say, Eve thought as she finally headed home. If notifying next of kin was worse in person or over the link. Either way, she had just sliced Alyssa Wyman's parents in two, face to face, and had done the same to Brent Michelson's daughter, who was in Philadelphia on business, via link. Their lives would never be the same. Death changed everything, she knew, and murder added a bloody smear to the change. She had to cut through the grief. It blurred focus. No enemies, no threats, no trouble. No bitter exes, no big piles of coveted money. At this point, it appeared the three victims had been ordinary, law-abiding people. Wrong place, wrong time. But why those three? Two of them regulars to the rink? Out of the dozens and dozens there, why those three? There was always a reason, she reminded herself, even if the reason was batshit crazy. She toyed with reasons as she turned through the gates, started down the winding drive toward home. Loewenbaum's remark broke through her theorizing. Dallas Palace? Seriously? Is that how some of the cops saw it? Maybe it did look something like a castle. Was that the same thing as a palace? With its grand stone walls catching the first glints of winter's bright stars. It had towers and turrets, and with the white expanse of snow, the ice shimmering on denuded branches of trees, maybe it looked like something out of another time. Another world. But that was Rourke's doing. He'd built it, his personal fortress in the heart of the city. And maybe it had impressed and intimidated the crap out of her at first, and for a while after. But now? It was home. Where fires would be burning. Where the man she loved would look at her in a way that showed her, in an instant, she mattered. Where a cat would rub against her legs in greeting. Where, she thought, as she parked at the front entrance, Somerset would loom in the foyer like a ghoul. Like he expected her to trail mud and blood over the pristine floors. And, okay, maybe she had, more than once. But not today. She checked her boots as she got out of the car, just in case. Today she didn't have time to give or receive any shit. She stepped in, and there he was, bony, black-suited, stone-faced, with the pudgy cat sitting at his feet. Save it, she said before he could lead with whatever insult he'd devised for the day. I've got a cop coming in, Loewenbaum. Send him straight up. And will your guest be joining you for dinner? She figured the silky tone took the place of the insult, though the question itself threw her off. What the hell time was it? She had to force herself not to check her wrist unit. Wouldn't give him the satisfaction. He's not a guest. He's a cop. It's work. To get some of her own back, she walked around the cat rubbing against her legs, shrugged out of her coat, and tossed it over the newel post. Naturally. Ignoring him, she started up the stairs, the cat running behind her. She headed straight to her office, stopped short when she saw Rourke leaning back against her desk. The man could stop her heart, then send it into full gallop. Just a look at him. They'd been married more than 2 years, she thought. Shouldn't that ease off? Where was that in the marriage rules? But a man who looked like Rourke broke every rule. That absurdly beautiful face, set off with the wild blue eyes of some Irish god, and the perfect poet's mouth. The black hair, silkier than Somerset's tone, tied back in work mode. The tall, lean length of him all in black. No tie or suit coat. The sleeves of his shirt rolled to the elbow. So he'd been home and working for some time. Yeah, the look of him broke the rules, stopped the heart. But it was that instant, just that instant, when those amazing blue eyes met hers that sent it into the gallop. In them lived love. Just that simple. Just that extraordinary. "You're just in time," he said, the Irish sliding through the words. For what? He simply held out a hand. She walked to him, and the first thing he did was draw her in, his clever hands skimming up her back as he brushed his lips to hers. Home, she thought again, and the last few hours dropped down on her, had her wrapping around him, leaning in. Knowing she could, here she could lean and not lose what she was. "You caught one," he murmured. "It's the murders at Wolman Rink, isn't it? I thought of you as soon as I heard the bulletin." "Yeah. I just left the first victim's parents and her 14-year-old sister smashed to bits. The most brutal part of a brutal job. I'm sorry for it." "Me too." He tipped her face back, brushed those lips over her forehead. "You'll tell me. I think a glass of wine first. There'll be plenty of coffee later, but a moment to settle for now." "Don't really have one. Lohenbaum's on his way over. I need him to look at the security disc. I need a consult." "He's SWAT," she began. "Yes, I remember him. Quite well, from the Red Horse investigation last year." "Why him, particularly?" "They were laser strikes. One strike for each Vic, and each one lethal. And I think they came from outside Central Park." "Outside?" "I see." Because he did, because he could, it relieved her of long explanations. Maybe one of them was a specific target. The other two cover. Maybe I'll find a connection linking the three of them, but... She shook her head. "I need to set up my murder board, start the book." "I can help you with that." "Yeah, thanks. Maybe if you..." She turned, and once again her heart stopped. But not in a good way. On her wall screen lived a pink and purple nightmare. Pink walls with purple squiggles framed a room filled with worse. Some sort of S-shaped seat sat in the middle of it all, carrying pink squiggles on purple, and that mounded with pillows in every color with dizzying designs. And fringe! A chair angled toward it, pink again, with big green dots, and were those feathers? Feathers rising up from the back in a bright rainbow fan? Under the window, framed in more feathers, a bright green glossy table stood flanked by two pink chairs, purple dots. The table held a huge purple vase full of weird flowers. Her heart started up again with a sputter as she spotted a U-shaped workstation, candy pink with a purple border. This can't be real. Charmaine put it together as a joke. Rourke shifted so he could cup Eve's face in his hands, which we'd both have enjoyed more if you didn't have murder on your brain. A joke. Designing what we'll call the polar opposite of what you want and need in the remodel here. Opposite. Completely opposite.
Alad, when she sent this, and the three actual designs, she said she thought the shock of this would smooth the way to the others. He smiled now, traced a finger down the shallow dent in her chin. Let's take a moment. Just scan the others and see if she's right. Just a quick glance. Then you won't worry I've nudged you into doing something you'll hate. You couldn't nudge me into that with a stunner on full. But I don't know if... Computer, design one on screen. As I said when we talked about updating your space, nothing you don't want. She started to argue, then saw the image. One of quiet colors, simple lines. And what had turned her tide in the first place? A big, kick-ass command center. Not a trace of pink, not a single feather or flounce, Rourke said. Design two on screen. Stronger colors, but rich rather than bright. Maybe a few more curves. Maybe a little plush on the seating, but not embarrassing. And design three on screen. She thought this one hit between. The colors muted, a little more streamlined on the furnishings. Better? Anything would be. You'll look at them later, when you've not so much on your mind. Okay. Take it down, will you? I hear somebody coming. It must be Lohenbaum. His cop, Rourke knew, would be mortified if another cop discovered her considering interior design. He ordered the images off as she went to the door to greet. Lieutenant Lohenbaum, Somerset said, then backed away. He came in grinning. She'd still term him Frosty, but she got Peabody's cutometer scale. Let me say, wow, some place. He glanced around, quiet gray eyes taking in every detail. You ever get lost? Sometimes. I bet. Hey, Rourke. Lohenbaum. I just got here myself, Eve said. I haven't set things up. No rush. Who's this? He crouched down to scratch the cat who'd prowled over to check him out. Galahad. Oh, yeah, yeah. I heard the story. The cat tripped the asshole, saved your bacon. You took a hit. You heard the story? You take down a sitting U.S. Senator, Dallas. The story goes around. Two different eye colors. Frosty. He's a pretty good cat, Eve told him, as Galahad preened under Lohenbaum's stroking hand. More a dog man myself, but yeah, he's a pretty good cat. He straightened. So? Would you like a beer? A glass of wine? Eve frowned at Rourke's invitation. We're working. Would a beer impair you, Lohenbaum? A quick grin that came with a flash of dimples. Not hardly. And I could go for one. As it happens, we have a special brew just arrived. Deputy Banner's family brew, Rourke told Eve, as promised. The cop from Arkansas, Eve explained, helped us bag those murdering lovebirds. Heard about that, too. Let's have a home brew and see what you've got. Give me a sec. Eve went to her desk as Rourke strolled into the adjoining kitchen. Rink security disc. Peabody's rounding up security from the rest of the park, but this shows all three strikes. She plugged in the disc, gestured to the wall screen. Run disc where cued on screen. See the girl in red? Can't miss her. She's a beauty, and she knows what she's doing. Was. Did. Lohenbaum nodded at the screen as Elissa took her last flight. Then his eyes flattened out at the next strike. And the third. Run it again. Cut the speed. Rourke came back in, two brews hooked in one hand, a third in the other. He paused,
watched the screen. Okay. Enhance the last strike. Start a few seconds before. Slow it more. Eve ordered the enhancement, slowed the speed. Narrowed her eyes when she thought she caught the faintest flash. Your shooter's nest is east of the rink. And that kind of accuracy? He's got serious training. That's not luck. East of the rink and above. Above? ME should confirm that, unless I'm full of shit. Thanks, he added to Rourke, took a beer. I'm going to be surprised if General Park Security picks up anything. Even in New York, somebody's going to notice somebody else climbing up a tree with a weapon. And I'm thinking higher, anyway. Run it back. Watch again. I thought I saw a flash, a red glimmer. The beam. Sorry, Rourke added. No, you're right. Loewenbaum nodded approval as he continued to watch the screen. A laser strike emits a beam. Hard to catch it, and it's fast. You get this to the lab, they can clean it up more.